yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the rubber bands straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show, Alternative Visions. And this week, we're going to talk about the U.S. economy, specifically the U.S. gross domestic product, GDP, and even more specifically, last quarter's GDP. That's the second quarter. That's the period April through June. That was just released. At least the advanced estimate was just released. We're going to give a little tutorial here as we go about GDP, what it is, what it isn't, and to what extent it is useful to look at as an indicator of the economy, and to what extent it has its own limits as well. And we shouldn't take too much trust in what the numbers say. But, you know, that's what's reported prominently here in the press and so forth, and that's what people generally consider the important indicator of the economy. So, you know, we're not going to disregard it, but we got to really understand it. What is it really saying to us? Particularly, what is it really saying last quarter? Last quarter, the numbers jumped to 4%, a 4% annual growth rate of the U.S. economy. Now, what's interesting about that is that it's one of the few quarters in the last 5 years we've had 4% growth. There's only been three or four quarters where we've had that. Normally, in recoveries from recession, it's almost every quarter that you get a 4%, 3 to 4%. Well, you know, the average growth for since 2010 in the United States, measured in terms of GDP, has been about 1.8% on average. Some quarters it's higher, some is even as high as 4%. Other quarters it collapses and sometimes even goes negative. So all in all, if you look at it, it's growing about a half to two-thirds of what is normal. And that's been going on for 5 years. That's the new normal. And we don't really have a recovery like we've had in the previous 10 recessions since World War II. And this continues. This is what I've been calling a stop-go recovery, a bouncing along the bottom, and what's called an epic recession, as I term it, recovery. All right. Short, shallow recoveries followed by short, shallow relapses. Relapses meaning a decline in the growth rate to 1% or less, and sometimes even a recession. Okay, so let's get back to talking about this second quarter. And keep in mind, the numbers this 4% last quarter followed a minus 2.9% drop in the first quarter of this year, January through March. Whoa, this is a big volatility going on, which is very abnormal as well, this kind of volatility. To go from an almost 3% decline in the economy, which is very significant, to a 4% recovery in the economy. We're bouncing along. A lot of volatility. And again, this is just the first advanced estimate. There's normally three estimates that are produced when GDP is reported. One is within a month of the quarter. That's called the advanced estimate. It usually is changed significantly, either up or down, because all the data of the economy has not really come in. It's just a partial look, and sometimes a very partial look. And I'm beginning to think that the advanced estimates are super partial. And more than ever before, it's an incomplete picture of the economy. Why do I say that? Well, because even in the first quarter of this year, they originally estimated a decline of only 1% in GDP. Well, they had to revise that up to 2.9%. That's a huge revision. A lot of volatility within the revisions, as well as between quarters going on now. So we can expect this advanced estimate to be significantly changed as we get on August 28th, the second revision or estimate of second quarter GDP. And then we will get another one a few months later. So there's always three estimates, an advanced, a preliminary, and a final. And that goes on for several months within the next six-month period following the end of the quarter. Okay, so keep in mind, this is not the final picture of 4%. Just as 1% drop last quarter, first quarter, was not the final picture, we ended up with a 2.9% drop. Okay, so moving on here. One other point to keep in mind before we begin here. A minute ago, I said that the average GDP growth per quarter since 2010 has been about 1.8%. That's been the average. When you average out the, you know, the highs, the 4% highs, and then the lows and so forth, it's been about 1.8%, which is well below what should be about a 3% average, at least, growth following a recession. The recession officially ended in June 2009. If people are interested in my analysis of what happened between 2009 and 2011, and during the 2008-09 crash, I would direct you to my most recent published book, which is Obama's Economy, Recovery for the Few, which analyzed what happened during the crash and then predicted we would have this stop-go recovery. That, of course, has panned out. That's exactly what we've had. And one of the reasons we're looking at the second quarter GDP 4% is because we want to ask ourselves, is this also a temporary little boomlet here? And that, as in the last 5 years, we will see a weakening going forward? Well, I'm going to answer in the affirmative of that, because that's been my my analysis. So let's continue here. And the other point I just wanted to make is that the International Monetary Fund has forecast U.S. GDP for this year, 2014, at only 1.7%. Okay, so 4% last quarter, but, you know, the professionals say 1.7%. Now, those are professionals who are global in their perspective, not like many economists in the U.S. Who follow the numbers month to month and can't see the forest for the trees and miss the long-term trends because they are focusing on number crunching, and that's not the way to analyze what's going on, I don't believe, here today. Anyway, IMF 1.7%, which is, by the way, pretty much what we've had, isn't it, for the last 5 years, 1.8%. And we're going to see that even that 1.8% now has recently been artificially boosted, as I've said in previous shows and in writings, because of revisions to the GDP numbers, including redefinitions of GDP that have been going on in the U.S. in the last year and globally for other GDP economies. So we got redefining, and the redefinitions lead to higher growth, higher GDP than had been the case before. Simply not real growth, but redefining what growth is. In other words, getting a GDP boost by redefinition. Also, this particular second quarter here, this 4%, has gotten an additional boost because it is typically in the summer that we get an annual revision to GDP. And it's also happens to be the year when we've got this five-year benchmark revision to GDP. Okay, so we got a lot of things going here. We got some real developments going on in the economy that are responsible for the change, the 4%. But we also have some technical things going on in the economy and GDP over the last year, and in particular, as is normal, here in the July numbers annually in 5 years. Okay, so Moving on, three important points. GDP volatility, what's behind it? Is the U.S. economy really such a yo-yo? In other words, 2.9% drop, a 4% recovery. We're going to see that this is not just the last 6 months. This kind of yo-yoing has been going on for several years now. And we want to know, why do we have such revisions to the first quarter GDP? Now, a minute ago, I said it dropped 2.9%. Well, the second quarter and the annual revisions that have just been announced as well here, along with second quarter numbers, include a improvement in that 2.9% drop first quarter. Now it's really new numbers, 2.1% drop. In other words, so 0.8% have been corrected upward. Okay, and you can use maybe that 0.8% as an indicator of the special revisions that have occurred this summer in GDP. And you got to ask yourself, well, maybe there's a similar special revision to what would have been the actual numbers in the second quarter's 4%. You know, maybe 0.8% is due to revisions, not the actual numbers. Definitional revisions and statistical methodological revisions. Okay, just a question to raise. But we do certainly want to ask ourselves and look in some depth here, why the extreme volatility shift between the first quarter of this year and the second quarter of this year? Why do we get a 2.9% drop or 2.1, whatever, and then we get a 4% recovery? Is it really because of the weather? Well, I don't believe weather analysis really explains much of this. Some of it, but I think it's been over-exaggerated. As I've said in my writings and in previous shows, I think maybe the weather accounted for maybe a half of a percent, at most 1% of the problem in the first quarter here. Certainly not the 2.9% or even the 2.1% drop. Now, there's more fundamental forces at work here, which we're going to talk about here today. Okay, so we want to look at why the big difference between first and second quarter and why we have such a yo-yoing going on in the economy, right? Is that real data actually fluctuating that much from quarter to quarter, the real economy, not the revisions and redefinitions of the economy, but the real economy. And, you know, even within a quarter, we're seeing these big revisions. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we go back, if you go back to the first quarter, at first they estimated a 1% drop in GDP, and then a 2%, and a 2.9%. That's a big change between the advanced, the second preliminary, and the third final estimate of GDP. And then, of course, we got this volatility between quarters. We got a 2-point-plus drop first quarter and a 4% up this quarter. So volatility within the revisions and between the quarters is a new characteristic here with GDP, particularly concerning. And we need to know, is that because of the real economy actually doing that, or is that because of statistical and methodological measures that are used for GDP? Right? Is there a growing problem with maybe the data gathering here, or perhaps all these redefinitions and revisions coming on top of each other, it's causing you know, some difficulty in getting the actual numbers correct. That's why we have big shifts between first, second, and third revisions here. Okay. So we want to look at whether this is normal here. Once again, keep in mind we have the actual data changing, but we have the annual revisions that come in the summer, right? In these annual revisions that just occurred, the government bureaucrats go back 3 years and revise the numbers. Now, I'm not going to go into the technical ways they do the revisions. You can read it, some of it, up on the Bureau of Economic Analysis website itself, if you're so inclined. But generally, these annual revisions have the effect of boosting the most recent data and lowering the previous data. In other words, the numbers have come out in the annual revision that shows 2011, 10 and 11, 12 even, were worse than reported initially, but 2013 and 14 are better than reported. Okay. And then we have this what's called comprehensive revisions every 5 years. And what that shows is that they take a new benchmark. Instead of July 2009, now we have a later benchmark. And they go back to 1999 to revise the numbers as well. Okay, I just want to raise the point here that we have real forces at work, changes in the data. But then we have methodological forces at work, and that seem to have come together all at once. And to what extent that is responsible for that 4% is the question. Okay. So I'm not going to go into the details of that. That would be awfully boring. I mean, it's like reading the telephone book. So we're not going to discuss that, but it's a question worth raising, right? How much of this is raw data and how much of this is statistics? Now, what do we mean by statistics? You know, you tend to think, well, that's what the actual happened to the economy, 4%. You know, that's like the jobs numbers, right? And it shows unemployment at 6.3%. Oh, that must be the true unemployment. That must be when 6.3% of 155 million people in the workforce are without a job. No. A statistic is just a operation on the real data, okay? A statistic is not real data. A statistic is an adjustment to the data. Now, we've been getting a lot of statistical developments going on with GDP and jobs and so forth over a number of years. Assumptions are brought into the raw data and piled on top of the raw data. I mean, obviously, seasonal adjustments make a lot of sense, right? But, you know, there is a question whether this recent Great Recession has jumbled up some of the assumptions in these statistics that haven't been reflected in changes yet. Okay. All right. So lots of extra operations going on. On the data, on the GDP data, you know, some justified, some questionable maybe, right? We have annual revision, five-year revision all at once, and then we have these three reports that we haven't seen the second and third of yet, right? All this has come on top of redefinition of GDP in the U.S. That was introduced last year. Now, redefinitions are different than revisions. Revisions are something that's always been occurring periodically, but redefinitions are, well, what do we include in GDP? It's always been a debate since gross domestic product and data in the 20s and 30s were originally developed in this country. What do we include as a real indicator of growth in the economy, and what do we exclude? Right? For example, anything that is bought and sold that is used goods, used products, are not included in GDP because we already included them the first time that they were used. So that would be double counting, right? But there are some other strange things. I mean, like the area of net exports. We subtract imports from exports, right? So you can have a growth in GDP simply because people are buying, U.S. consumers are buying fewer foreign goods. Now, that's not any real increase in production in the U.S., but it shows up as an increase in GDP if people buy fewer and fewer foreign goods. All right, so that's one area. You know, another phony area, I think, is, for example, rents. Rents, which is the income side of GDP part, you know, it's a category, we count as rental income what homeowners pay themselves rent. Yeah, homeowners paying themselves rent, we count that as part of the income growth in the economy, which is a flip side of production. Well, you know, I've never thought much of that. I mean, do people really pay, who own a home, pay a mortgage, pay themselves rent? That's nonsense. Okay, you know, I could go on this many, many times, examples, but it's imperfect. GDP is imperfect, but it's what we got. Okay, now there have been redefinitions to this introduced last year that artificially boosted U.S. GDP, and significantly, starting the third quarter of last year, going forward, right, and retroactively going back. So all the numbers were boosted up by hundreds of billions of dollars a year because of redefinitions. Now, I've talked about these redefinitions before, and at the heart of them is $350 billion in the second quarter here, GDP increase, as a result of businesses now able to count as their expenses on research and development as part of investment. An expense becomes investment. Oh, that's interesting. And also, now they can evaluate intellectual property. You know, their trademarks, their logos, and, you know, stuff like that. They can just say, well, it's worth this much now. It's worth more than it was before, and that looks like an increase in GDP. Well, this is really shaky ground, as I believe. Others don't, but I believe that counting expenses as investment is a slippery slope, you know, because there's really no real increase in production going on as a result of this. And, you know, where does this stop? Where do we stop including expenses as part of GDP? I mean, if it's R&D, why not somewhere else? Now, the reason why they did this is because there's been big tax cuts going on for corporations and businesses on, so far as research and development is concerned. So if you can increase the amount that you're indicating as R&D, you can take probably more tax cuts. Okay. If you want more about this, detail about this, go to my blog, jackrasmus.com. I have an article there that was produced not too long ago called The Real, Real GDP. Okay? And I talk about some of the other issues related to GDP that tend to overestimate it. Okay? And then if you really want to read my critique of this redefinition, go back to a piece I wrote also on my blog back in, I think it was October, November of last year, where I talked about the revisions to R&D and IP, and that piece is called Economic Recovery by Statistical Manipulation. Okay. As an addendum to this, you know, this attempt to redefine what GDP is going on globally. Redefine it upwards, in other words. Again, to add new statistical operations and so forth to it. If you look to Europe, you know, Britain, Italy, Europe, their GDP is even in worse shape than the U.S. We'll talk about that at the end here. Looks like some parts of Europe are slipping into a third recession since the crash of 2008-09. Something I predicted, of course, as well. Europe is even a weaker recovery, weaker stop-go than the U.S. And recently, into late 2013-14, barely came out of their second dip recession. And I mean barely. I mean, it's like a 0.5% growth rate across the Eurozone, continental economies. UK is doing a little bit better, it looks like it's slipping back in to a third triple dip over there. We get these relapses, as I call them, in the U.S. economy, where the growth collapses to almost to about zero. We've had three relapses, by the way. Europe and Japan have bona fide double dip recessions. We've had a relapse in negative growth of 1.5% in the first quarter of 2011. Then we had a negative growth in the fourth quarter of 2012, revised up to a 0.1% growth in the fourth quarter of 2012. And then, of course, we had our negative 2.9%. here in first quarter. So whereas the U.S. economy flattens out and dips into a recession periodically at one quarter, Europe does it, the real way. Now, part of this problem is the Europeans more accurately reflect adjustments for price and for inflation. The U.S. minimizes its adjustments for inflation, which boosts real GDP even more. But that's, another one of the questionable practices that go on in the U.S. to keep GDP looking like it's better than it really is. Okay, but the point is Britain and Italy and Europe recently redefined their GDP even more questionably than the United States. Well, what did they do? Well, they're counting prostitution services and drug dealing now as part of GDP. Now, this is really absurd when you think about it, because in order to estimate the growth and the contribution of a particular area or category to GDP, you got to know the volume, how much of this stuff was sold and at what price. And how much is the price change from quarter to quarter in order to get the real GDP? Now, when you think about it, prostitution services in general and prostitution services and drug dealing services in particular is really questionable. How do you know what the market price is for prostitution services? Let's just call them tricks, okay? How do you know what the market price is? Where are you going to go? Go talk to the John or talk to the prostitute? Who's going to give you the right number? How are you going to do a survey? You get this picture of these bureaucrats, in the UK and Italy and places, going to prostitutes and say, well, how much did you charge for that service? And we know there's multiple kinds of services. And then you're going to get different estimates from the John that you're going to get from the prostitute here, right? What's the price? How do you list what tricks you count as volumes of services, right? And inflation from period to period. How do you know what the quantity is of these services per period? Would you ask them how many times per night or whatever? What's the average price? What's the average price of these services? Because, all the GDP is based on averaging. Who gets interviewed by these government bureaucrats, right? Are these reports reliable? Oh, no, they make big assumptions. They don't go out there and knock on the door of the ranch or whatever it is and ask them how much they're doing and at what price and what's the average and so on. And they don't call them either. Well, prostitution in Europe is much more regulated than the U.S., so, it's a little bit of that whole service that they can get some data from there, unlike here. But then, the vast majority of it is not regulated. You can't regulate that. Big questions about the assumptions they're making, and all GDP is based on assumptions. And the same for drug dealers, right? Any drug dealers are going to answer calls from the government to say how much volume they're moving and what price they're selling it? And besides, what's the price? Is it the dealers moving the stuff into the country? Is that the price? Is it going from the dealers to the street vendors? Is that the price? Right? No one's going to talk to anybody about that. Anyway, that's what they count. Really getting ridiculous. And some countries, like Nigeria and others have recently almost doubled their GDP by redefining it. So we got this redefinition going on with GDP. Pretty phony stuff. Now, we haven't done that yet in the U.S., right? So we're not talking about that in the U.S., but it's just an example of what's going on. And I'm not saying the U.S. is baking the numbers, right, putting phony numbers in GDP. They don't have to. They have scientific methodologies that allow them to adjust, to tweak GDP from time to time. A few years ago, they introduced what they called the chain pricing, Now, real GDP, it gets reported, and it has to be adjusted by inflation. Well, the lower the inflation you can come up with in products and services, the higher the real GDP. And chain pricing lowers, chained indexes lowers the price. And then, of course, we have several indexes. We got the GDP deflator, which really underestimates inflation and compared to the CPI, Consumer Price Index. So it all depends which one you want to pick and whether they're chained or not chained. And these are all examples of how methodologically these things are manipulated. So, you know, it's not a question of bureaucrats lying and faking the numbers and so forth. It's the statistics that have been, the methodologies that have been developed over the years that allow them to do this. It's not outright falsification, right? It's science. Okay. All right. So before we look at the actual numbers for the first quarter and second quarter of GDP and break them down into details, you know, we're going to leave this redefinitions and revisions and the methodological stuff behind, and we're going to go look at the real numbers now, right? But before we do so, I want you all to make sure you keep in mind GDP is not the measure of what a recession is. You know, people think two quarters of consecutive negative GDP means a recession. It's not, right? The recessions are defined by economists at the National Bureau of Economic Research. They know the limitations of GDP, and they look at a whole bunch of other economic indicators, you know, employment and retail sales, and exports, imports, and so forth. They look at a whole thing. What's the methodology? Well, it's kind of like, you know, on the end of edge of an envelope. It's not, well, maybe not that bad. But there is no true formula that you can pump numbers in, crank it out, and say, oh, recession. It's kind of very subjective, and debates go on. You know, they decided in 2001 with one quarter GDP negative that we had a recession. Okay? The problem is that approach, even with the MBR, you end up with a recession ending when things aren't continuing to drop further in the economy. In other words, when the drop stops, the recession is over. Well, I think a recession ought to be considered over when all those key indicators have reached the prior level that they were when the whole contraction began. You know, it should be a full cycle, not a half cycle of, okay, we're not falling anymore, it's over. Right? It should be over when you recover. And if you look at the full recovery, some of the indicators have recovered and some haven't. So, you know, it's kind of like a half to two-thirds recovery still after 5 years, right? Okay. So keep in mind that GDP is not the measure of a recession, and this other method is. GDP typically is overestimated because of the price adjustment methodologies we use, right? Chained and deflator and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay. And keep in mind that we've had three relapses, as I call them, to distinguish them from recessions in the first quarter 2011, fourth quarter 12, and now first quarter 14, which means if we had used a better price adjustment process and we did not do the estimations the way we do them and maybe looked at more than GDP, that we might have already had a mild double-dip recession in the U.S. It's quite possible. All right, but Europe and, of course, Japan have had double dips. Europe has had a double dip already and in some places drifting into a triple dip. And Japan has already had a triple dip, and now after a little bit of boost, it's stagnating again. Okay, so let's look at what's behind the second quarter actual numbers for U.S. GDP. What actually is happening? Why are we getting this big volatility going on of a big drop first quarter and just as sharp recovery second quarter? Well, as far as the advanced numbers are concerned, we got to see still what happens here over the next couple months to the second quarter adjustments to the numbers. Don't take too much truth in the advanced indicators because it's not a complete look at the data. Very, very tentative. As I said, they initially estimated a 1% drop in the first quarter. It ended up 2.9% drop. Okay. So we got a 4% initial advanced indication of the second quarter GDP growth. This will almost certainly slow down or be reduced some in the coming quarters. And that 4%, of course, has been added to by revisions, annual and five-year revisions. So how much that's responsible is a question in itself. Okay, so let's move on to the numbers. Now, if you're going to look at the GDP, you look at typically four main areas of the economy, right? One is consumer spending, which is 70% of the economy. You know, you GDP in the second quarter, $17.3 trillion. And what comprises that 17.3? Well, 70% of it is consumer spending, household spending. You know, on houses, and retail's a big part of that retail spending. And, of course, autos is a big part of retail. We're going to talk about that in particular. So consumer spending is what we want to look at. Consumer spending dropped precipitously in the first quarter and then recovered in the second quarter. We're going to see, you know, what constitutes that. By the way, it always recovers better in the second quarter because that's when folks tend to get their and spend their tax refunds here. Okay, so consumer spending. We also want to look at business investment, business spending. And now business spending breaks down into several very important categories that we want to look at separately. One is spending on equipment, and that includes software. Okay, plant, equipment, software. Plant meaning structures, commercial structures, offices, factories, warehouses, hotels, etc., commercial structures, right? And equipment, software. And then there is this new category that I talked about, this whole intellectual property that was added in 2013, that now constitutes all about $650 billion of GDP. Is IP stuff now that we talk about, which is about 0.4% of GDP. In other words, if it's 0.4%, and we have 4% GDP growth last quarter, all things equal, the redefinitions added to 0.4%, which means we're probably really about 3.6%, 3.7% GDP, not 4% growth. You know, if you take out those redefinitions that we introduced last year. Okay, but we're not going to take it out. We're going to leave it in here, keep talking about it. So business investment, plant and equipment, structures, IP, and inventories, business inventories. In other words, producing stuff and putting it in inventory. And we're going to see this is pretty important for this volatility we've been looking at going on. All right. So first two sections, consumer spending, 70%, business investment, government spending, both federal and state and local. You know, federal budget, a lot of it goes to states, and the states administer and spend a lot of it, not the defense side, but the non-defense side of it, and states share with the localities, counties, and cities, and so forth. So a lot of the federal spending really takes shape through state and local governments. But then there's direct spending by the federal government itself, both on defense and non-defense. So we want to look at that, what's going on there. And then the fourth area is what's called net exports. Not a very good term, net exports. I always thought we should have called it something else because it is the difference between exports and imports. Growth in exports adds to GDP. Growth in imports subtracts from EGP. So it's the net that is really what includes calculations towards GDP. Net meaning difference between exports and imports. Okay. Now, we got some problems here because net exports is determined, both the exports and the imports, by the volume of things that are goods and services are actually sold, both as exports and both as imports. So in other words, prices affect the value of net exports. Well, prices affect the value of everything, right, in GDP. Oh, but here you have a different thing that plays a role, and that's currency exchange fluctuations. In other words, prices can rise simply because a particular currency collapses in value, or vice versa, right? And that could be the change in the exchange of the U.S. dollar to, say, the euro or the Chinese yuan, or vice versa, you know, changing those in relationship to the dollar. So price fluctuations that are due to exchange rate fluctuations affects the prices of imports and exports, affects the adjustment in real GDP. It has nothing to do with what's produced. Nothing to do. Right? These are just price fluctuations because of exchange rates. But it shows up in GDP. So you got to take that with a grain of salt. Also, you got to take with a grain of salt the U.S. exports going on, which have been increasing, which have a lot to do with oil production now. U.S. has shifted from a net oil importer to a major exporter of oil here, particularly as we do all this fracking. Shale gas fracking, you know, I don't know why they call it shale gas fracking, because it's really fracking for oil just as well. You know, in fact, they're producing more oil and gas in some of these places. This is really an oil fracking revolution, not just a shale gas revolution going on. The oil can be exported, and this is being exported. We've always been a big exporter of oil, by the way, just not crude oil till recently. It's called chemicals. Besides agriculture, number one export of the United States. All right, so net exports, government spending, business spending, consumer spending. These are the four key areas, and we want to look at these areas in particular to see what's happening second quarter versus first quarter. Okay? So we want to break down each of these and look at it at least over the last year. And we want to go back to the third quarter of last year. What happened in the third quarter? Well, we got 4.2% increase. Well, actually, it was 4.5% increase in GDP, even bigger than the 4% we got in the second quarter here. Oh, but you know what happened after the third quarter's 4.5% last year? The economy slowed down in the fourth quarter and went negative in the first quarter. Okay, so what that means is that growth, 4.5% in the third quarter, was temporary due to temporary factors that then disappeared quickly afterwards. And the question is, do we have this 4% growth last quarter also due to temporary factors that have the potential of declining significantly in the coming quarters? Is this a repeat going on here last quarter? Second quarter of what happened in the third quarter of last year? And can we expect another slowdown, if so? Okay. Interesting question, at least, right? So let's look at what areas of the second quarter GDP growth have contributed the most to the second quarter 4% initial estimate, right? And do those areas that contributed the most have the potential for once again relapsing? In other words, significantly retreating from the second quarter, just as what happened in the third quarter. If you look at the third quarter of last year, the big contributor to that 4.5% growth was, guess what? Business inventories. Business inventories surged last year, third quarter last year. 1.5% of that 4.5%, one-third, in other words, was all business inventory accumulation. And as I've said elsewhere in GDP analysis I've done, what happened was businesses bought the hype that, okay, now the economy and the consumer is going to take off here in the second half of 2013. So they built up their inventories in expectation of big consumer spending that would follow. But it didn't. Okay. Big consumer spending did not follow the growth in inventories. At least inventories, of course, are goods, products. You know, you don't build services inventories. Consumers did spend on services last year, but they did not spend, as expected, on inventories, business inventories of goods. So as soon as that became clear in the fourth quarter of last year that consumers weren't buying all this stocked up business goods, well, what did business do? It contracted those same inventories. And that contraction really hit hard in the first quarter of this year. So big inventory buildup third quarter last year, big inventory contraction first quarter this year. Over one-third of the decline, the 2.9% decline, was inventory contraction. One-third of the growth of GDP third quarter 13, inventory accumulation. These are huge swings in inventory, temporary swings. And we see now what's going on in second quarter numbers is the same thing. Businesses are building up inventories again, 1.66%. Of the 4.0% growth in second quarter, once again, business inventories in expectation that, oh, this time the consumer is going to start buying in the second half of this year. I didn't believe it last year. I don't believe it this year. Okay, 1.66% after a 1.16% contraction in the first quarter, following a 1.49% growth in the third quarter of last year. Yo-yo, business inventory yo-yos going on. And the reason why it's yo-yoing is because consumers really don't have the money to engage in sustained economic recovery. Disposable income is contracting for the bottom 80% every year, 1% to 2%. There's no income growth because there's no wage growth and no job growth. Well, we're getting some job growth now. Yeah, oh, low wages, right? Part-time, temp, contingent work, low service jobs, no benefits, nothing, right? That's the kind of jobs we've been creating, and there's no income there. Yeah, to the extent consumers are consuming, they have to do it based on debt again. Which brings us to the second area we want to talk about. To the extent that we are getting consumption, it is strongly concentrated in durable goods, particularly autos. Autos, automobiles have been surging. Automobile sales, well, very recently it looks like that surge may be coming to an end. But if you look at the second quarter 4% growth, right, the contribution of goods, about 1.4% to that growth, 1% of that 1.4% is autos. Auto growth. Well, excuse me, durables, 1% of all the 1.4%. We have this other category, non-durables, you know, food and gasoline and so forth. So, but half of all the durables is automobiles, 0.48%. So what's holding up the contribution of consumer spending is automobiles last quarter, automobile spending. Now, you're going to ask yourself, how long can that continue? Well, if you look even deeper into the numbers, most of this boom in auto sales is because of what's called securitization of autos. Auto subprimes is what's going on. What's a subprime? What's an auto subprime? Well, you may have remembered we used to talk about subprime mortgages, right? And the reason why the housing industry got so overheated was because banks would issue these mortgages and then resell them, repackage these mortgages into mortgage-backed securities and CDOs and so forth, and resell them, dump them. In other words, relieve themselves of any of the risk holding loans that were issued to people who really couldn't afford to buy those homes, right? And that really stimulated home sales. You know, it became banks just writing these mortgages and then dumping them. So write as many as you can, make as much money as you can, and dump them. Well, that's going on with autos now. Also going on to some extent with credit cards and other consumers. Consumers are loading up on credit and debt again. That's the only thing that's keeping consumer spending from totally collapsing, credit and debt. That can't go on forever because you really need real disposable income growth if you want sustained consumption. That's not going on. But it's enabling the auto companies to offer these huge discounts, you know, zero down, zero cost to drive off, you know, zero, 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 four zeros. It's like giving the cars away for free. And people are going out and buying them. People who really can't afford to buy them. And then the auto dealers, companies are selling this crap, just like the housing did. Right? We're heading for an auto subprime bust. Of course, it won't affect the economy as much as the home subprime bust, but it's the same practice. Because we don't have real income growth in this country, they're finding out ways and working ways of alternative credit and debt. But that only makes it worse for the next time around. That only builds what I've called consumption fragility. You know, you heard this term financial fragility for banks and businesses. Well, the same thing for households, at least the bottom 80%. And then, of course, even governments become fragile, balance sheet fragility. And in my book, Epic Recession, Prelude to Global Depression, written in 2009, I predicted that this total systemic fragility would continue to grow, as it has. That's the topic of another session here, which we'll have in the future, about growing systemic fragility, both in the U.S. and globally. And when we have the next financial crash, which we will have, it will be even worse. By the way, I don't think it'll come in subprimes and in housing, and I don't even think it'll come in the stock market. I think it's going to come in a bond market. Okay, that's getting on too much of a digression. The point, once again, to summarize, is the autos, because of auto securitization subprime stuff, is driving durables and consumer goods spending. If you look at services spending, which is bigger than goods, consumer household services, ooh, it's getting worse. If you look at the second quarter, only 0.29 contribution to the economy. That's half of autos only, and services are huge. It was 0.86 in the first quarter, positive contribution to the economy, which dampened that 2.9% drop. Would have been worse. Services spending are slowing down, and services is broader, and services is a better indicator of the lack of real income growth and the slowing of consumption in this country, which is 70% of GDP. Now, we got a temporary boost here going on in autos because the way it's financed, just as we have another temporary boost because of a huge surge in business inventory spending. That's what's behind these numbers. Now, those aren't really fundamental, long-term, sustainable developments for consumption or GDP. That's my point. Okay? Now, we also have developments in exports going on. Exports, also in the second quarter, did much better than they did in the first quarter. Exports contributed 1.23% to the 4% of GDP. That's pretty big. Okay, but, you know, we also have an even greater problem with imports. Imports contracted by 1.85% of GDP in the second quarter. Well, what this means is that it's probably likely that imports are going to slow. Import purchases are going to slow because just as people can't afford, households can't afford to buy U.S. goods, they're buying less foreign goods as well. Now, ironically, that's going to show up as probably in contribution to GDP, because remember, if imports are reduced, net exports minus imports, rise, therefore GDP rises. But it's really an indication of a growing weakness in the economy. The other fourth area that contributed to second quarter growth clearly was state and local government spending, which went from a negative contribution in the first quarter to a positive contribution. Well, this is a repeat coming. We'll see that probably increase more in the third quarter of what happened in 2012. Before every election, national four-year and midterm elections, the federal government boosts spending in order to try to make the economy look and perform better than it is, so, you know, the incumbents might get more people to support it. Okay, so that's what's going on. Right? And that's temporary. That went on in the third quarter 2012 and then disappeared. So we have state and local government spending, we have exports, we have business inventories, and we have auto sales, all of which are really behind this second quarter boost here in GDP, but all of which are temporary, are not part of a sustainable growth. Sustainable growth comes from real disposable income for most of the households growing, and that's not happening. And you can see that in the decline in services spending by consumers. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Next week, we're going to have a guest to talk about single-payer conference, national conference coming up on single-payer, which is really Medicare for all, which is really the only solution to this dumb Affordable Care Act that's been passed and fattening the profits of hospitals and drug companies and providing minimal benefits to everybody else. Okay. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. We'll see you next week. Tune in.